Ibn Alexander.
I'm scared. Reptilian strange creatures are beaming down. My God! My God! They're beaming me up with them. Don't put that probe there. Don't put that probe there. Don't put the... Ooh. 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 Listen to the Judge of Mabus radio show at 11 p.m. Eastern, Saturday nights with host Jeffrey Pritchard, bringing you The High Strange. Visit www.churchofmabusradio.com. That's www.churchofmabusradio.com.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world needs to hear the truth.
Mabus, everybody. It's Saturday night. Whole Earth's frozen just about. Far as not, it's in the 40s here, but hopefully it gets colder a few more times before March or May or whenever it gets warm here. It's already warm on some days here, but compared to the rest of the country, it's pretty warm. But I've been seeing the pictures and everything, the frozen wasteland, and up north in Yankee territory, it's frozen. Correct. First off, I just want to announce the guests, and we'll talk about next week's guests. Tonight, Tessa B. Dix with us. We're going to be discussing her book, Fallen Angels, and this is her third time on the show, and she was on the show at the very beginning when we first started. She was also on the show with Anthony Peak, and this is her third appearance. And just some background, formerly married to Philip K. Dick, sci-fi guru, author, novelist. You know him from a lot of his books that inspired Blade Runner, Total Recall, and Minority Report, and Scanner Darkly, and, you know, Philip K. Dick. So that's her background. She has a new book coming to that in the first hour. And we got Michael Jagger and with the high school with him, so some nostalgia. And he's going to be helping co-host with Tessa in the first hour, and hopefully in some future shows he's going to help out as well. And he has a pretty good background with horror movies and things like that. I've been on his show about his horror film show, radio show. And we'll get into his background, but he's also appeared on The Walking Dead as a zombie, so we're going to get into that in the second hour, and his experiences on the set of The Walking Dead, which starts back up tomorrow night, I believe, on the second part of the third season. So looking forward to that. And And then next Saturday, we're going to have Brad and Sherry Steiger. What's the name of that book? Oh, Four Leg Miracles. Basically, it's stories about dogs who, you know, those heartwarming dogs vanish from their households and then suddenly show up like 4 years later or something. Like those kind of stories from Brad and Sherry Steiger. So that's going to be a good show, no doubt about it. And then the next week's Micah Hanks on the UFO Singularity. Micah's been on the show, God, like five times or more. And then after that is the big show I can't wait for, which all these shows are big shows, but Jim Mars, that's right, on occultic history. Do the elites conceal ancient aliens? So Jim Mars, really looking forward to that on March, the first Saturday of March. And that's pretty much it for announcements. And you can also, I did some new Examiner interviews that have been doing very well. You can go to churchofmavisradio.com and hit Florida Paranormal Examiner. And I just did an interview with Dr. Jeff Meldrum and William Barnes on the Falcon Project, which is basically an aerial drone project where they're going to use a drone to seek out Sasquatch from the skies remotely. Also interviewed Nick Redfern on Examiner about his book Monster Diary. Christopher Noel on Sasquatch again, that's a good one. Dr. Rita Lewis on Man-Made, Chronicles of Our Extraterrestrial Gods. You can find all those at churchofmavisradio.com. You go up to the top, click Florida Paranormal Examiner. You can go right in there, and you can find all my interviews that have been doing extraordinarily well. And also, a great week. I know I've mentioned this before, but now I'm permanently writing for New Dawn Magazine. So you can go to newdawnmagazine.com and check them out. Great magazine. I have a lot of articles appearing in their magazines with my interviews. Andrew Collins, hopefully the Jim Mars one will be in there. There's one with Gerard Artisan about George Adamansky. I'm going to be a regular contributor to New Dawn Magazine, which I think is one of the best magazines out there right now, paranormal and UFOs. So that comes out regularly. Like, there's magazines lately that I don't know what's going on with them. UFO Magazine, it's like, I don't know. That magazine barely comes out anymore. Fate Magazine, they haven't updated their blog in, like, since years, that Fate Magazine. So there's some other good ones out there, but I think New Dawn, since I write for them, is the best one out there right now. So let's get to the show. We got Tessa here. First off, let's say hey to Michael so we can hear his voice and get adjusted to his tune. How's it going, Michael?
What's up, man? Happy to be here.
You're here. We're here. What was the show? I was on the Horror Hour, right?
Yes, sir. That was a great show.
Great show. And now you co-host a show called, what, Zombie Cast?
Yes. Yes. Anything and everything about zombies. Unofficial guide.
Nice. Well, I tell you what, let's get into Tessa, and then we'll get more deeply into your world in a second.
Sure,
Hey, Tessa. Definitely. Are you there,
Hello.
Tessa?
Hello. I'm here.
Here's Tessa.
Well, I guess people won't confuse my voice with either one of yours.
No.
Hey, Brad Steiger's work has been some of my favorite reading material, and my husband was actually corresponding with Brad Steiger shortly before his death.
Really? So Philip conversed with Brad before his death? What were they conversing about?
Well, they were sending letters back and forth about Phil's strange mystical experiences.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought so at the time. Even more so, Brad Steiger has gone on to write so much more. Well, anyway.
Yeah, Brad's great.
Oh, yeah.
great dude. It'll be his first time on the show and with his wife, too. I'm really looking forward to that. Can't wait. But, Tessa was saying that she's not too far away from where Django Dorner, the psycho dude that's killing the LAPD, burned his car up. What was that story, Tessa, for our audience about that crazy dude?
Apparently his truck got a broken axle, so he set fire to it on a forestry service road, which means a dirt cut in the forest that was laid by a bulldozer. People are speculating that he took off on a motorcycle after that. Either that or he walked out of the mountains, which is not difficult at all. From where he was, it would have been really easy. You just walk downhill. Walking uphill is a bit different. But anyway, that's been really scary. But I'm not worried where I am.
Yeah, he seems to just be after specific people. What bothers me so much is a lot of conspiracy types, not all of them, but a lot of them. They're trying to make him into some kind of hero, and this guy's not a hero. If you're gonna, he killed kids. That's what I was told. He killed kids to his lawyer. He killed the wife and the kids.
Well,
that's not a hero.
The girl was 28 and her fiancé was 27. That's far too young to die.
Yeah.
You know, even a lunatic can get something right once in a while, but I really wish he hadn't gone off the deep end like that.
Yeah, these shooters never go after the people that, you know, I'm not saying anybody, I'm not going there. They always seem to go after kids or people at McDonald's. It's like, if you're going to do it, I can help you. You need to watch God Bless America by Bobcat Goldthwait.
I finally saw
which
that.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Oh, if you're gonna be a spree killer, you know, reality TV shows and some of these right wing hosts on radio shows, not kids at McDonald's or whatever.
Yeah,
well, what's really scary is the cops have such bad aim that when they thought they saw his truck, they shot wildly. In not only into this pickup truck that was just a couple ladies delivering newspapers, but also into nearby houses where people were sleeping.
They're going crazy.
They're supposed to be able to aim a little better than that.
Yeah, they're going crazy. They're shooting up. There's been two vehicles shot up just because the vehicle looks like this dude's vehicle.
Yeah, he doesn't even have it anymore.
It blew up. It's like, man.
Yeah, somebody was trying to be a hero. Yeah, I recently had the pleasure of hosting a couple radio programs on another station. I really appreciate how hard your job is now.
Yeah, once you get used to it, it flows. But at first, when you first start out, and it's like, wow, what am I going to talk about? I used to never talk that much. Now I'm like, blah, 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 since I've done radio. I can't shut up.
Definitely passionate about it.
Well, I forgot to announce the phone number, so people didn't call in, and I had to fill the whole 90 minutes. But that was okay. I still had stuff unsaid when I got through.
Let's go into Fallen Angels territory. Tell us about the premise of your new book.
Well, for quite a few years, I've been fascinated with Chapter 6 of Genesis, in which the angels came down and mated with human women. So I attempted to bring them to life as real people from another world. People like us, but different in some ways. And of course I had to have them at war with the Archons. That's kind of a new term in my lexicon, but they're the principalities and powers that Paul talked about. The power behind the throne, the unseen evil, or at least not good, entities.
The Archon situation is kind of new to me. I've heard of it, but I noticed lately people are going crazy about it. And I think I saw Christopher Knowles show me his post, and there were some references to Star Trek, and it's been around for a while. But I noticed lately that it's definitely the new thing people are talking about pretty wildly. And I'm kind of still learning about exactly what it is and what it means. So, I mean, to you, it's like this... sinister, the principalities of darkness, kind of like, I guess, darkness. It's the forces of evil, sort of, right?
Something like that. One reason for the popularity of the term now is that more people have access to translations of the Nag Hammadi texts, which are primarily Gnostic. They talk about the Archons as sort of spin-offs of the spiritual powers that created this universe where we live. And they're jealous of us because they don't have the qualities that make us human, like emotions and or perhaps even they might be soulless. They are more like machines, but they are living things. I guess you might call them cyborgs. They're more machine than organic in the Gnostic tradition. I turned them into insects. But alien insects.
Gotcha. So, who are the Aeons? The Aeons are like the good guys?
Well, they haven't actually appeared in Fallen Angels, but it's only Volume 1. The primary Aeon in my cosmology, which is not quite the same as the Gnostic tradition, the primary one will be Sophia, God's holy wisdom. Phil envisioned her as the Holy Spirit. And I might go with that. It seems reasonable. It's not in agreement with the Gnostic tradition, but it just seems right. Sophia means wisdom. Yeah.
So the book, from what I've been reading it, it's sci-fi mixed with kind of like spiritual truths in a way. Who are the characters? Could you tell us a bit about some of the characters?
Oh yeah, sure. It begins with I don't call them angels. They're Terran. They live on a planet called Terra. T-A-R-A, which is a sort of bow to the Irish tradition that the gods lived in Tara. T-A-R-A. It's also the same as the plantation in Gone with the Wind, and that is not violent. In any case, they are fighting the good fight against the Archons. They are not perfect, or at least not perfectly good themselves. They have faults, too. And they've engaged in a eugenics program. And it just seemed that because of all these elements, science fiction would be the best way to present this alternate Genesis story. You know, a lot of it come straight from my imagination, but I've also done a couple decades of research, and tried to put a human face on the story and to fill in the details that we don't get from scripture. We're real people, have real lives and real conflict, real problems. And I just had to have the dinosaurs living on Earth along with the first man, who of course is Adam, and these angels. The reason I don't call them angels is because that's simply a transliteration of the Greek word for messenger, and they're more than that. I mean, human beings can take on the role of a messenger from God. The prophets did that all the time. So in that sense, they were angels. But these are a separate creation. And whenever a preacher tries to tell me that there are no aliens, I always ask him, well, what about angels? They aren't human, and they don't live here. They come from the sky. You know, the Bible says heaven, but that just means the sky. It isn't necessarily some ethereal place.
And when is your book due out? Is it out yet at Amazon, or is it about to be out?
It's on Amazon right now. I have not released it on Kindle, but that might happen in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. In any case, since these are fallen angels, not necessarily evil, but fallen, there had to be a reason for them to live on the Earth and not on their own planet, so I blew it up. That part was kind of fun, blowing up Terra.
That's always fun, right? With dinosaurs and everything. There's a lot of dinosaur stuff in the news recently. I think they said that they died 60 million years ago. I may have the years wrong, but it was a long time ago. Has it really been 60 million years? Is that what I read today? I read it in an article.
It was, I heard something about that. It was pinpointed or narrowed down the date.
They keep saying millions of years, 300 million, whatever. The problem is, they're finding DNA in dinosaur bones. DNA doesn't last millions of years. It just doesn't. So there's something wrong with our dating system, and I've always suspected that. Plus, there's all these finds, and of course they're always ignored and ridiculed, but people keep finding human footprints preserved alongside dinosaur footprints. It just seems unlikely that dinosaurs and humans never coexisted. It's possible that humanity has been around longer than we think, and that dinosaurs died out a lot later than we think. So I'm going with that hypothesis. I can't prove it in any sense, because I'm not a member of the club. You just can't possibly be listened to or believed if you don't have a PhD and a little shovel and a painter's brush to show that you've been looking at dinosaur bones and you have the pedigree and the permission of the powers that be to look at evidence and come to conclusions.
What is the years that some people from, a religious point of view, they think the Earth's only been around for what did you say, Glenn, 12,000 years or less than that? 6,000?
No, Bishop Usher's chronology came to about 6,000 years, and most religious scholars agree that that chronology is faulty.
Someone in the chat.
I would place the history of our Earth, not necessarily the whole planet, but the planet where we have lived, somewhere between 12,000 and 70,000 years.
Someone in the chat room just said the Earth's still flat, too.
Oh, is it?
In the chat room said the Earth's still flat.
That's really funny. Yeah, and that's why when a ship goes out to sea, the last thing you see is the tip of its sail.
I'm going for the 60 million thing. Is that the years they said, Michael, in that news break, 60 million?
So, yeah. I wasn't sure of the exact date, but I know that they'd nailed down like a very specific date. It wasn't like as bad as it was.
How can we believe them when they keep changing? Sometimes it used to be the Earth is millions of years old, and then it was, oh, no, it's 2 billion years old, and then it was, no, it's 5 billion years old. Now they say it's 6 to 7 billion years. Well, sure, it could be. I'm not saying that it isn't. I'm simply saying that the human race on the Earth as we know it is much younger than that. It doesn't mean the planet wasn't here, and it doesn't mean that nobody lived here.
Yeah, they keep changing it. That's the humanity for you.
The evolution in technology, too. You know, as the technology expands and we're able to do more things with technology, I think we're able to hone in and get more accurate figures and accurate reads on things where we were left to speculation before.
Perhaps it's improving, or perhaps they need to justify some of their other conclusions. Mm-hmm. But my tentative theory is that another race of people, not human, lived here before us, and they might go back millions of years. But I just can't imagine billions of years for the simple reason sun couldn't be that old and be what it is today. If our star were that old, it would have blown up eons ago. It wouldn't be there, or it would be quite different from the sun that we see in our sky.
Exactly. We're still learning, and so your book's going to be a trilogy. You're looking at a trilogy. You're going to do the Star Wars, Lord of the Rings deal here. This is your Star Wars.
Star Wars. Star Wars was fun, but it was a fantasy, cowboys and spaceships. I've been rather slowed down on all of my writing because about 2 years ago I cracked my skull, and for the longest time I couldn't manage to find words. I would be in the middle of a sentence and forget the word I was going to say or the word I was going to type. I am recording, but it's been slow and difficult.
Well, you got a book out now, so at least it seems like you're doing a bit better. So you finally got a new book out, so I'm sure it's been a process, but at least finally you made that hurdle.
And part two will introduce Sophia, of course. I mentioned that, but it will also have Noah's blood and a few other exciting developments with the Archons, and of course I have to bring in the Eons, who are basically the good spiritual beings of the Gnostic I don't know what whether to call it a religion. It's more of a spiritual worldview. See, I'm still searching for words. It's frustrating sometimes.
So the aeons are just kind of like chilling on the Earth-like planet, and the Archons come along to kind of like mess up everything, right? They're like the Eves that sabotages everything, and they, you know, the intervention of darkness, so to speak.
Yeah, they're kind of childish. They throw tantrums. They have the negative things we associate with young toddlers who haven't been socialized quite yet. They're impatient and jealous and covetous. They think they own everything. Everything is mine, mine, mine.
Yeah. So what do you think about the theory? Like, I've heard people talk about this. I'm probably off on what they're actually saying a little bit, but this is the gist of it. That they say the Archons are kind of like the forces in the Old Testament of the Bible, and then the New Testament is like the real God coming to eradicate that. Because you have the Old Testament, and it seems like what you're describing to me, like an angry God that's jealous and, you know, babies' heads on rocks and killing the firstborn of Egypt. And it's like, in the Old Testament, God's like Tony Soprano. I will say that's the Archons in the Old Testament. And then when Christ comes, that's the real God to break open that dimensional gate or lock. I don't know. That's some weird theory. But have you heard anything like that at all when it comes to the Archons?
Yeah, that's pretty much sums it up. Of course, from the Orthodox point of view, not like the Orthodox Church, but what most the Christian theologians believe that's a misinterpretation of a patient God who warned the Pharaoh repeatedly, don't do that, like a patient parent saying, don't mess with the dog, he'll bite, or don't mess with the cat, she'll claw you. And finally, don't touch the stove, it's hot.
Yeah, it's like the Old Testament God's Tony Soprano, and the New Testament he's a liberal hippie. There's a big change up there. But then there's Revelation, so I don't know. It's all confusing to me, but I've heard the Archons, used as examples for stuff in the Bible, but I don't know the actual roots or origins or all that. I'm still trying to learn what these Archons are and everything. The Archons.
So, when is her book come out?
Are you there, Tessa? May have dropped her by accident. Her phone. I don't hear her. Tessa, the Archons got her. My God, man.
Uh-oh.
Holy Christ. Wow.
It just went from fiction to nonfiction.
I know, right? Only on the Church of Mavis radio show. Tessa B. Dick, stolen by the Archons, abducted. Holy shit. This is backcountry. Do you see what God just did to us? Where's Joe at? I'm trying to find Joe. Tessa B. Dick was abducted. Bring her back. I love Tessa. You come on, Archons. I think her phone just dropped, is what I'm thinking. Or she might have ran out of time. I don't know. I'm trying to communicate with JoJo. But, yeah, this Archon stuff, everyone's talking about it, like in the UFO thing. I don't know nothing about it. I'm kind of ignorant when it comes to it. So I know a little bit. But, I mean, there's people that talk about it, like, real serious and stuff, and I'm just learning about it. It sounds interesting, but I was reading Christopher Knowles' blog post on Secret Sun, and I read some of it. I should have read all of it, but I'm a terrible, terrible person. But I know you showed there was some references to the Archons in Star Trek. So,
oh yeah.
But there's other there's like the old Star Trek episodes. There's the Archons, stuff like
that. Wow. Okay.
Yes. It's like they're pretend gods or something. Like, I guess they're demons trying to be gods or trying to act like they're gods, and they're not. They're just like Tony Sopranos.
Nice.
We're just Tessa. Bring her back. We need the Aeons to intervene and bring Tessa back. Please. I don't know what to do. Her phone may have died. She's out in the wilderness.
Look.
In the snow.
Yeah.
Joe's probably eating ice cream.
It may have been a connection issue.
Yeah. So I'm trying to send Joe an IM to see if he can get her back with us. He's probably off doing something. He's right at the casino. Joe, you can't go to the casino during a show. Come on. You're supposed to listen to it. I don't know. He's got to be here somewhere. Somebody asked me to sing. What would you like me to sing? I'm taking a request. I'll sing a song.
Hold on, where are you in chat?
Oh, there's a chat room on PalTalk. It's full, actually.
Oh,
and
okay.
The one at the radio show doesn't get that full. I mean, on the front of the site, doesn't get that on PalTalk that's loaded up right now.
Hello?
Hey.
What happened?
I don't know. We jokingly said the Archons got you, and then we said the Aeons to save you.
Well, I tried to launch the player to listen, and it won't launch for me.
I don't know, but you're back. I think it's just a phone problem or a Skype problem. I don't know, but you're back.
Oh, you're on Skype?
Well, the studio uses Skype, and we're on the phone, but Skype called us on the phone. We're not on screen names. He uses Skype on the studio, but to call the phones. But we're not actually, I'm not using Skype. I'm on a phone.
Huh.
The studio uses Skype. But,
well, anyway, I think you got the point of what I was saying.
So, let's get back to the book at hand. You got the dinosaurs and the Earth and the Archons and the Aeons, and there's characters, right? What are some of the characters' names? There's like male and female, and are they like part of some kind of like Star Trek, Ethan, like that the Aeons describe their personalities.
They have normal names like John and Peter and Angela, but their last names, their surnames are strange because they're in a eugenics program with basically six lines of genetic material, the highest being the first line. And many of my characters are fifth line or sixth line, and those are their last names, their surnames. It tells their rank in their society. By the way, their eugenics program has really backfired on them. They haven't improved their race at all. They've actually harmed their genetic diversity, but also their ability to reproduce, partly by traveling in
space where they're subject to all kinds of radiation, but also by messing with this eugenics program, they're inbred.
Okay. Hmm. Oh, so the aeons are inbred?
Well, they aren't eons, they're just angels.
Oh.
The Terrans. The eons will be spiritual forces who can take a human form, but these Terrans are actually angels with bodies like ours.
Okay, so there's like humans for the Terrans, and then the aeons are kind of like the good forces, and then the archons are the evil forces. Someone in the chat room wants to know if they ride dinosaurs.
No, in fact, they shoot dinosaurs. With their laser rifles. And they keep them out of the camp with an electric fence.
Well, I bet dinosaur tastes good. That's some fried chicken right there. Some T-Rex burger.
They call them dragons.
But yeah, so the dinosaurs are just like the enemy. They hunt them and all that stuff, and
You wouldn't want to let wolves into your camp when you're out in the wilderness. You wouldn't want to let a T-Rex in either.
Shoot, no. If you're just chilling in the wilderness and a T-Rex shows up, man, I wouldn't want that to happen.
Because they are not from this world. They are not allowed to kill the native fauna. They can only stun them or sting them.
Yeah. Well, I've started the book, and it's very excellent, and I highly recommend it to everyone to check out on Amazon.com. They can just go there and type in Tessa, T-E-S-S-A, B, Dick, D-I-C-K, and Fallen Angels, and Tessa's page will come up, and what's your website? It's TessaBDick.com?
No middle initial, just TessaDick.com.
Okay.
You don't need my middle initial to find me on Amazon either.
Okay. So, any new developments in the Philip K. Dick world? I know there's a lot of stuff going on. Isn't there some convention or something weird going on that's supposed to be happening, or that happened last year?
I don't know what's coming up, and didn't manage to get to any of them either. On top of everything else, I broke my leg last July. It kind of limited my travel. But in any case, I did review a book called Cryptology on my blog on testanddick.com. It's a nonfiction work by a professor at the University of California, Long Beach, and it's about mind control in all its forms, especially in education, in the U.S., of course.
Yes.
And also in the media, like television commercials telling us to eat sugary cereals and stuff like that.
That's called cryptoscatology. I saw you and Andy talk about that.
Well, you know, scatology is an actual scientific discipline. It's the study of scat, which is excrement, the poop that various creatures leave around. So crypto-scatology is the study of the crypto-poop.
There's a lot of poop in the crypto world, let me tell you.
Well, anyway, Robert Duffy's book is very interesting, and it does relate to Sal's work, and it even has a couple pages about him.
But I've been heavily involved in the Bigfoot community for the past year. Like, I've been doing so many interviews. Me and Andy Colvin, Mothman photographer, did a ton of Bigfoot interviews together. And he's also working on a Bigfoot book, which I'm featured in heavily. I can't wait for that one, in our interviews as well. And, let me tell you, the Bigfoot community makes the ufology community look sane. It's like grown redneck men arguing over a monkey man, like violently. It's crazy. These people in the Bigfoot community scares me.
I've been looking at the evidence with an open mind, but not letting my brain spoil out.
Well, someone in the chat room said, why do UFO people and Bigfoot people hate each other? And, well, the reason that is, I think, a lot of people in the Bigfoot community, they think Bigfoot's just this undiscovered ape and that there's no paranormal elements to it whatsoever. Of course, there are some Bigfoot people that do believe in the paranormal elements, but a lot of them just think it's just a monkey, like undiscovered wild monkey. And if you bring up paranormal, they go crazy. They'll kill you.
There is a recent DNA study that, if it's valid, shows that the mitochondrial DNA of a supposed Bigfoot is human, but the nuclear DNA is not any known animal. Of course, I bet we don't have every animal on Earth in the database. But
yeah.
If it's valid, then whatever this creature is, it's part human and part something else. That kind of makes me think of Genesis chapter 6 again, the Nephilim, the product of angels mating with human women.
I believe there's a Nephilim connection, and they're possibly multidimensional, can step between realms, and there's a shamanistic aspect to them. Because there's a Kathy Strain Moskowitz wrote a book, Cannibals and Giants and Monsters, or something like that, and has all this native folklore about Bigfoot. It's excellent. All these native tribes have been talking about Bigfoot forever, since, like, you know, the dawn of creation or whatever.
Most of the native tales say that they are people. They're big, hairy people.
Yep. And they're in tune with nature, and they can, like, they're smart. I mean, no one's really, only evidence you get is a footprint, a piece of hair, and supposedly DNA. Of course, the Melba Ketchum thing, I find it interesting, but a lot of people in the Bigfoot community are going crazy and they're mad about that. It's like these grown redneck dudes that have these Bigfoot groups, they want to be the first people to come out with Bigfoot evidence, so that's why they hate her. Because they weren't the first group to come out with Bigfoot stuff, so they hate her. She's like some, you know, a chick coming out with Bigfoot stuff.
It's a chick.
What was that?
I bet they want to shoot a Bigfoot.
Yeah, that's it. There's a lot of people in the Bigfoot community. Not all of them, of course, but that's what I call the ones that want to put King Kong's head on a stick and parade around and get money and, you know, at the circus. They want a King Kong Bigfoot and put it in a cage and shoot it and stick its head on a pole and, you know, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. So, I don't really like those types. They get on my nerves, so they make me sick. But I think Bigfoot's too smart for them. There's some that claim they've done it, but I don't think most of them are hoaxes and no evidence, so. But, that's why I think there's a spiritual or paranormal element to Bigfoot. It's just so smart. Yeah, if it's connected to the Nephilim, that's like an alien connection, so no wonder they're not catching these things. They're smart. They're really more, they're intelligent and in tune with nature, and, you know, they can hide, and, you know, all you get's a footprint.
I've lived in these mountains for 20 years, and I've visited them for decades before that. I have never seen a bear. I've never seen a trace of a bear. No bear hair or footprint or piece of a bear bone. Nothing. So I just tell people, well, bears don't exist. They aren't real because I've never seen one. But my neighbors claim they saw the bear. They claim he lives right across the street in the creek. Or he at least travels there. I've never seen him.
Exactly.
I did hear a police scanner once. This woman deputy said there's a big effing bear in the dumpster behind the rock. It didn't say effing.
Yeah, I've heard there's bears around here. I've never seen one, so there's so many vast acreage in these woods that God knows what's out there. So, I mean, I could see how Bigfoot could hide, too, but I still lean towards the paranormal when it comes to them on many levels. But, like I said, a lot of people in the Bigfoot community hate that, and I'm open to the idea of it. I'm not closed-minded against them having some kind of multidimensional aspects.
I think the jury is out on that. Until you've met one personally, you won't know for sure, no matter what gets published about them.
Exactly. And we'll see what happens with this DNA situation. I know David Paulides is involved, and I like him. I like his research. And all his books, and Bigfoot, Tribal Bigfoot, and the Hoopla Project, and of course he's also did more missing 411, which is some pretty wild stuff. So he's involved with it. He's like one of the main people involved with that whole DNA study. But for some reason, Melva's got the spotlight on it, but he's involved with it too. But and he's former policeman and hardcore. Die Hard, and there's in his books, there's a police forensic artist who draws Bigfoot from the actual witnesses. They're great books. I enjoy them a lot. Well, I guess, Tessa, it's at the end of the hour, and it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And,
now we'll get down to earth and talk about zombies.
That's right. That's right. You're welcome to stay as we talk to Michael if you have any questions, or you can go, whatever you want to do.
I'll stick around for a bit while I fill up my coffee.
Awesome.
Okay. Yeah, Michael's an interesting cat for sure, so it'll definitely be worth the listen. And you can go to Amazon.com, Tessa Dick, TESSADICK. Or TessaDick.com, and that book's Fallen Angels. And you can also find her books about her life with Philip K. Dick, sci-fi guru of Blade Runner, Valis. There's so many books.
I think the best one was already recalled. You know, it was a whole lot like his story.
Yeah, Minority Report, that was great, for sure. All right, well, we're not taking a break. We're going to just go straight to Michael.
Let's do it.
Michael.
Oh,
yeah, me and Michael went to high school together. And,
you did.
I know. I don't remember much of high school, some of it. I remember being in a corner in a trench coat reading Anne Rice books. That's about it, with like a Guns N' Roses shirt on or something.
Yeah,
I don't know how the hell I graduated. I'm surprised I did.
The rules were a little different back in those days.
Well, nowadays they graduate you if you take your butt in your chair.
Exactly.
I remember going to I can't even remember the name of the high school. Jonesboro Senior.
Oh yeah, Jonesboro.
Yeah, 93, and it was a rough time for me because that's when I went through testicular cancer and all that crap and came back in my 12th grade year and all that stuff. And then I graduated, my dad died, and after that I lived at that house. I know it used to come up with like the Manson compound.
Yes, that was a fun place to be.
Yeah. So I jokingly say the Manson compound. There was no violence there, but there was a lot of partying at that house. And
yes, there was.
There was. That house, that was basically, after my dad passed away and I graduated, I had a house. I bought it for my Italian first wife, and her family was in the mafia and they hated me. And she divorced me, and I never partied. I was quiet. I was just a quiet nerd. My dad always told me if I ever did drugs, he'd shoot me in the face, so I never did them. So after he died, I went crazy and, like, did everything and went to concerts, Marilyn Manson, Metallica. That house became Party Central, and Michael was there.
Actually lived.
You lived there, too? I don't even remember.
We survived.
A lot of people live there.
Dude, we, you know, you're actually part of one of my favorite and most interesting stories to tell people. And,
really?
Yes, you may or may not remember this, but do you recall a camping trip up to the North Georgia mountains?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I do.
Involving the Georgia Bureau of Investigations.
Oh, yeah, the GBI came out there. Were you there, too, with the Ouija board thing?
No, dude, it was like we went up there camping, and we had pulled off, when we would go camping up there, we would just find a road and just drive down it. You know, we didn't go to any, like, campgrounds or anything like that. We were, like, out there. And we stopped at the side, and there were bones, like, in this box next to this little, like, waterfall coming down from the road. And I remember going back home and telling my mom about it. And, dude, she, like, flipped out. She's like, oh, that could be someone's kid and this, that, and the other. And then before I know it, the damn GBI's involved.
Yeah.
And you and me and a couple other guys meeting a GBI agent up there. And
yeah.
We ended up operating with him for about an hour.
Yeah, basically, there were several. The first story was when I went up there with a bunch of guys with a Ouija board and took my dad's ashes and threw them off a mountain. But this story Michael's talking about, we were in the mountains, and basically we were hanging out in the North Georgia mountains partying, and we came across this hole with, like, a box and, like, surgical gloves in it. Uh-huh. And it was just really freaking creepy, and we were, like, all high. And we found it, and we didn't know what it was, and it creeped us out, and totally freaked out. And I guess your mom found out and called the GBI, and we had to go back up there.
Yeah,
and show
it was all nuts, man. I still haven't forgiven my mom for that yet. That was a crazy, crazy, crazy day. There's so many things that happened that day. It's just, God.
I remember. I'm not going to go into detail, but Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas comes up in that briefcase.
Yes, very, very much so. Very much so. But yeah, that's one of my favorite stories to tell, because that just, oh, that was just such a an interesting day.
I personally remember meeting the GBI on cocaine.
I think we smoked a good bit when we went up there.
What GBI?
Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
FBI.
We were in the woods, and we found, we didn't put it there, of course. We were just, like, partying, and we found a hole with, like, bones in it and surgical gloves in it, and we were partying, like, we were doing drugs like idiots. I haven't done cocaine in 16 years. If I did cocaine now, I'd be in an emergency room.
Oh, God, you and me both. My body can't handle that stuff anymore.
And back then, after my dad died, I was crazy. I went crazy doing all kinds of stuff. But we basically were up there partying in the woods, and just, you know, it was innocent, and we just came across a hole in the ground with weird bones. I think there was a box or something, and surgical gloves. And it was just
bizarre. That's weird.
Yeah, it was really, and of course my mom's giving me the guilt trip, like, oh, you know, that could be someone's child, or this, that, and the other. So, you know, it just made me feel all bad, and so we ended up going up there and meeting a GBI agent, and we took him to the site, and he determined it was dog bones or something like that. But I remember...
Is that what they said? I don't even remember.
So.
I don't know.
But I remember us going up there because it was very slippery, because it was like water running off this ledge, and we were climbing up this ledge, and I swear there was one point where the GBI dude slipped and almost busted his ass and slid down the hill, but I think one of us grabbed his arm or something like that.
Yeah,
like this hero diehard moment. It's just so crazy. And then, of course, after we ended up off-roading with the GBI guy for about 45 minutes to an hour, and he dropped us off, we ended up pulling off to smoke a little bit, and we ended up getting busted by some, like, locals who were trying to, like, pass themselves off as policers and confiscated all of our shit.
They took our weed.
They did. I was so pissed off because, man, I was so afraid that I was going to get, like, a ticket in the mail or something. Dude, I went to the post office and bought a damn P.O. box to filter my damn mail for the next couple of months, because I didn't know
what
the hell was
coming. They said something weird to me. I started saying weird stuff and pointing at mushrooms, and they asked about my tattoos, and everybody was telling me to shut up. And I was
I remember we told him why we were there, because we even had the GBI dude's card. You know, he gave us his business card, and we were like, dude, you know, literally, this is why we were here. But, that was a crazy, crazy day.
It was like park rangers that stole our weed.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, those are the days. That's one thing I miss about Georgia's weed. I'm trying to find weed here in Florida. They still think it's like crack here where I live now. It's like marijuana is like heroin to these police officers here in Georgia.
I hear Colorado and Washington are the place to be right now. So.
Yeah, really. It's been 1,000 years before that happens down here.
Well, you know what I read not too long ago is apparently there has been a medical marijuana law on the books in Georgia for, I think, close to 30 years now, but nobody's actually ever stepped forward and I guess rolled with it or something like that.
They probably get assassinated.
Yeah.
They talk about it. All right, well, thanks for reminding me of that story. I forgot about it.
I'll never, ever forget that day.
It was in there. I had a weird story, too, where I went up there and we followed a Ouija board, and it told me where me and my dad went as a kid, and we threw his ashes off a mountain, and we all cried after it spelled I love you. So there were two different stories, and I had them both in my brain. Yeah,
wish I'd have been a part of that second one. That sounded like it was really, really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess the part I want to get at is basically what happened to me after my dad died and I got a divorce. I went crazy and messed with the occult and had a lot of paranormal experiences, UFOs and stuff like that, and I became a drug dealer. And I was the type of person that never touched drugs ever until my dad died and I got a divorce. I was against drugs, I hated them, and then when all that stuff happened, I was crazy. And that was like, God, I don't even know how long ago. I'm 38 now, that was in my early 20s, like right after I graduated.
We were late bloomers.
Yeah, we were late bloomers. Everybody else was doing that stuff when they were like 14. I didn't do it. I lost my virginity at like 19.
We wanted to be mature enough to be able to handle it. That's why we waited.
That's right. So I guess what I want to know, Michael, is I noticed on your Facebook is that you're with all these celebrities with their autographs and hanging out with them, like Kevin Spacey and just countless cool people that you've met and hung out with. And I know you've interviewed Sid Haig, which who I love, and all these different people. I've seen the pictures. How did that happen? What happened with that? Tell us that story. I mean, how did you get caught up in all that?
Always been a super fan, man. You know, even back into our high school days, you know, I was all, you know, into the newspaper staff, and, you know, I had my entertainment section in the high school newspaper, and at that time it was, you know, a lot of local bands
you know, in the Atlanta music scene at the time. And I think really what kind of broke me out of that was I did a story, and at the time it was very, very controversial. I covered the Normal Potfest in Piedmont Park 1 year, and they had the Black Crowes out there playing a free concert, and it was just immense, and it was very, very bold story to go with, but, you know, I didn't get any restrictions. They didn't hold me back or restrict me in any way, censor me in any way, and, you know, for a high school newspaper to cover something like that back in our days was pretty groundbreaking. But that was kind of how it started for me. From there, dude, I've just been a fan of the entertainment industry, you know, be it music, be it, you know, television, movies, and I became pretty hard into autograph collecting for a while. I spent a lot of time with friends, being, I guess, what you would call a groupie, meeting a lot of bands and stuff that would come to town, you know, hanging out in the backstage areas and that kind of, and meeting up with folks, and it was just such a cool experience, you know, meeting these folks that you look up to and that you know, at our age we idolized, you know.
Yeah.
So to be able to interact with those folks that you see on TV and that inspire you was addicting. It was really, really a lot of fun. So,
well, yeah.
From there, it just kind of expanded.
So I know I've seen the Kevin Spacey picture, which was awesome because I love Kevin Spacey. But who are some of the other people that you've autographed or hung out
with? A couple of my prize pieces. Mick Jagger. I actually sent a picture. They were on tour, and I sent an 8x10 photograph to one of the arenas they were playing at, and I included a little letter that explained that I was in fact named after him. His name is Michael Philip Jagger, and mine is Michael Philip Jagers. So, I mean, my parents were huge Stones fans. So, you know, I thought it was a shot in the dark. I thought I'd give it a try, see what happens. Well, about a week later, I get it sent back to me from another address in Washington, which matched up where their it coincided with their tour as far as where they were going. And he had signed it to Michael, best wishes, Mick Jagger. And, you know, that was one of my prize pieces. Woody Harrelson is another one that I was able to get when he was here filming Zombieland. And cool. he's a hard one to get. He's a very, very unique guy. As you know, he's very green. He's very,
yeah,
very into the earth. And but like when you talk to him, it's like he there's this awkward 30 seconds or so of him just staring at you like he's looking into your soul, trying to figure you out. It's just really, really, really weird. But yeah, I got Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis on a Natural Born Killers 8x10. So I mean, I'm still a collector. I still like to collect these and go to the conventions and stuff. But now that I'm kind of tiptoeing into the business, it's kind of hard to juggle the two. It's almost like an either or kind of situation, you know. So, you know, with The Walking Dead and with Vampire Diaries and all the other things that you know, I've been up to over the last couple of years, it's not kosher to do those kind of things when you're on set because you're working, they're working, you know, it's set etiquette. So,
what did you do in Vampire Diaries?
Vampire Diaries, just a couple of bit parts. I did a scene where I had to actually go to the sound studios and take a dance class to learn how to do the Virginia reel. It was for a flashback sequence at a ball, and, you know, we had to get fitted for tuxes. All the ladies were in corsets, and, dude, we shot for like 21 hours in this mansion in Covington, and, it was really, really cool. You know, it was really, really intimate. It was a nice, nice scene. And then I did another scene for Vampire Diaries where I actually played a wounded Civil War soldier that was being eaten by one of the main cast members, one of the main vampires.
Cool.
Yeah, so that was really, really cool. And then, you know, just little bit parts on some other movies. As you may or may not know, in 2008, the state of Georgia instituted a 30% tax for productions to come here and film. And since 2009, it's just been progressively building and building. In March of 2009, at one point,
Zombieland was filming here, The Crazies was filming down in Perry, Georgia, and Rob Zombie was in Covington filming Halloween 2. So it's like the best time in the world to be a horror fan in Georgia at that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just kind of built from there. So, you know, now you've got productions like, you know, Hunger Games Catching Fire that just wrapped last fall. And they're actually, this is information that's kind of hot off the presses. It's not actually confirmed, but it kind of is. The Zombieland television pilot is going to be filming here within the next couple of weeks, and I think they're going to be putting
out a big
casting call for that. Yeah, so that's going to be
Amazon.
Exciting.
Yes, Amazon only?
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be real interesting how they're going to do it. I mean, they've already cast two of the characters. They are kind of all, like, you know, not no names, but, you know, not real big names. But, yeah, they kind of scrapped the whole sequel idea and just decided to run it as a television show.
Huh.
It'll be interesting to see how that transpires and that works out.
Kind of weird.
Know. Yeah, with everything going on, man, I tell you, it's just crazy. I mean, De Niro was in Georgia twice last year filming. Morgan Freeman just left. Kevin Kline's been here twice. Owen Wilson's been here twice. Jason Bateman's been. I mean, it's never ending. And now they just announced about a couple days ago that Pinewood Studios in England is actually buying property in Fayette County to set up an Atlanta hub for their studios. And they're doing the Hobbit movies. They did the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. They do the James Bond movies. So, I mean, that's just you know, icing on the cake with what's going on already in Georgia. So, yeah, it's a really exciting time to be in Georgia.
Georgia's a weird place.
It, you know, and I tell you, I keep telling myself, you know, God, if this had only happened 10 years earlier, you know, right after we graduated, you know, you roll right into something like this and... You know, because there wasn't anything like this back in our day. You know, my first acting gig was on a Ted Turner movie called Andersonville, and that was back in 95, and that was a big deal at the time. And, you know, it was just a call that they had put in Creative Loafing, looking for a bunch of skinny guys, and, you know, at the time, I thought I'd give it a shot, and, you know, you get bit by the bug at that point, and you kind of just ride the wave from there.
Nice. Well, I guess let's get into The Walking Dead because that's one of my favorite shows. And just briefly, some of the shows that are my favorite shows, Walking Dead's definitely one. True Blood, even though it's got kind of wonky the last few seasons. What else? Dexter. I just started watching Banshee on Cinemax. Cinemax is trying to do shows now. Banshee's actually really good. I like it a lot.
Is it really? I have some friends that actually work on that. And I think it's in North Carolina where they film that.
Alan Ball's involved. The guy that did True Blood and 6 Feet Under and American Beauty. And it's by his production company. It's worth checking out. It's really good. What's another one? Spartacus. I watched that one for the gore and boobs. there's some other ones. I just can't remember. But Dexter and Walking Dead, and those are definitely some of my favorites. And Walking Dead's just been through so much when it comes to the cast change. Like, I know Frank Darabont left, and now the Glenn, whatever his name is, Mazzara or whatever, I'm probably saying his last name wrong. Now he's gone.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's gone through so much shakeup, but it's still surviving, luckily. And the last, the beginning of the third season, I actually cried during one of those episodes. Like, it triggered. The one where his wife, the baby, has the baby and she dies, and the zombies eat her.
Yeah.
That was the most, I cried at the end of that episode.
I'm telling you, Andrew Lincoln's performance in that episode, why that man does not have at least 3 Emmys right now is beyond me, because he deserves that and more. I mean, watching the marathon today and looking back at some of the episodes from the second season, he puts so much into his character that you literally feel the pain and the anguish going through. I mean, and that's like so hard to do, to really put the audience in that spot, and he almost does it flawlessly. I mean, he's so talented.
Yeah, that episode was intense, and the governor, that's definitely, that's just, I like that character, he's creepy. and Michonne. Who's the actress that plays her? She's great. What's her name? The actress?
Her name is Danai Gurira. And she's fabulous. She's been working with the katana for months and months and months now. And I tell you, it's something really special to be on the set and to watch her rehearsing a sequence or going through the motions with another stunt person and just to see it all evolve and become this epic scene. I mean, she kicks ass. She really, really does.
Definitely. And tell us about your zombie appearances. Which episodes?
Well, I tell you, it took me a year and a half to get on that show, and that was persistent emails and you know, just letting them know, you know, like every other week I would send an email in with my information and everything. And about middle part of second season, I got a response like almost 5 minutes after I sent it, you know, saying that, you know, we'd love to have you tomorrow. You know, and that's pretty much how this business is. It's like you have to have pretty much wide open availability to be successful in this, because you don't get any notice at all. You know, when they put these calls out on Facebook and stuff like that, it's usually for the next day or, you know, the following day. There's not a whole lot of room to plan. But I ended up going onto set my first night. It was actually for the Trigger Finger episode, and that's the episode where Randall falls off of the roof of the pharmacy in the town and impales his leg on the fence.
Oh, yeah.
And Herschel and Rick are contemplating how they're going to cut it off or how they're going to get him out of there, and his screams attract us. And I'm one of the walkers that are coming down the alley to get Rick. And so that was my first experience, which I was really naive. I went so jaded and just because I was a fan, you know, before I started working on it. So to be there, it was just like, just giddy, you know. And I was so naive. I had all these plans about leaving there with the makeup on and going to the drive-thru at McDonald's and coming home and waking up my kids and scaring the hell out of them. And, you know, it's like the day, and they're like, no, you can't leave with the makeup on. You got to take it off. So, you know, what they do is they hand you a can of Barbasol and a moist towel, and you go into the bathroom and you just kind of, you know, wipe it all off. Unless you're a hero walker. A hero walker is one that's selected usually by Greg Nicotero or one of the K&B makeup effects guys to be featured. Usually it involves some sort of interaction with a cast member or some type of on-camera appearance. And for hero makeup, you're basically head-to-toe done. You've got at any time four or five prosthetics on your face. You get the contact lenses in at one point, and it's to the hilt, and it's usually about 90 minutes in the makeup chair to make all that happen. But my first hero zombie was in the season 2 finale when we take over the farm, and I actually the walker that falls on top of Lori Holden, she turns and shoots me in the face, and then I fall down on top of her, and then T-Dog sees me on top of her thinking I'm eating her, so they assume that she's been taken and they leave her there. So that led to her, you know, meeting
that
up with
you?
Michonne and getting to Woodbury. Yeah, that was my first featured bit, and that was a lot of fun. That was, it was real, and, you know, I tell you, Greg Nicotero was actually directing that scene, and they had two units that night at the farm. One of them was shooting the scene with me and Lori, and then on the other side of the farm, they were shooting the scene with Glenn and Maggie in the car, contemplating whether or not they were going to stay on the farm or go, and they're getting surrounded by walkers around the car. So, you know, it was the last couple of days, so it was go, 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 go. But it was really, really cold. There were two school buses full of us walkers for, I believe it was four overnights at this farmhouse, and it was so, so cold. But I wouldn't trade it for the world, man.
Yeah, that's great. I didn't know that was you, that zombie. Wow.
Yeah, yep. And then
this season,
I was called back for day 3 of production. It was the first day with actual walkers, and they were testing out a new assembly line system for makeup application. And we only got one scene all day because of the weather. And it was basically the reveal of the prison. It's Rick and Daryl walking down the train tracks, and then they come up on the prison yard, and we're all kind of scattered. I didn't get called back again until episode 7, and I was actually
the walker in the woods as Rick and Daryl and Michonne and Oscar are on their way to Woodbury. The camera pans through the woods, and I'm the walker that turns and kind of initiates the horde that chases them into the hermit's cabin. And one of the five walkers that are on the front porch banging on the door while they're in there, you know, doing their thing.
They throw him out. Throw him out as a decoy, sort of.
Yeah. And that was a crazy, crazy scene to shoot because, you know, once they put those lenses in us, we're blind. The lenses that Greg Nicotero likes to use, I mean, they totally eliminate your pupil, and it's just a milky haze. So that's really what you see. So, you know, it may look easy to portray a zombie, but there is a method to it, and there is an art to it, and Greg has got it down to a science, exactly what he wants to see on film and what he wants, you know, us to do. So it only adds another level of difficulty to pulling that off when you eliminate someone's vision. So,
yeah.
You know, we're at the door and we're rehearsing the scene where, you know, Rick opens the door and they toss him out and we have to catch him, you know, because he's basically dead weight. So we have to catch him and we have to turn him in a way to where he lands on his back. So after a couple of takes, after a couple of tries, you know, we finally got it down. And this was actually my first time I got to witness an actual ripping open of the body cavity scene, which was a lot of fun. That was a lot of blood. Unfortunately, I didn't get to partake in that because they didn't want to mess up our hero makeup because they were going to use us a little later on in the day, and they didn't want to get us all bloody. So they put a bunch of other, like, mid-ground walkers up there, and they had this fake stomach on this guy. And it was filled with, like, balloons filled with blood, and then there was the tube that, you know, went off to the side with the guy pumping it. And they would film from, like, a distance the ripping open of his stomach. And at one point, you know, you hear the funniest things and the funniest quotes on set. I think at one point Greg had yelled something to the effect of, "I need 10 blood-filled condoms on set as soon as you can get them here." It's just like the craziest things you hear on set. But it was really, really cool. And then they go in and they start doing close-ups of, like, the walkers actually eating. And what they do is they put pulled pork on top of the fake wound, and that's what the walkers are grabbing and actually gnawing on when the close-ups are there. So it's pretty crazy how the set smells like barbecue for like 2 hours after a scene like that.
What about the noises the zombie makes? Is that something they do, or you have to do the zombie noises?
It's a little bit of both. We do, you know, Greg will tell us to snarl or something like that, and usually, you know, it produces some kind of a sound. I don't think they use any of our sounds, though. I think they've actually got voiceover actors that go through and do the moaning and then the grunting and that kind of thing, and then, you know, all the sound effects with, like, you know, slicing into watermelons and that kind of thing. Yeah, they've got all that.
You making zombie noise.
Yes. And you know the craziest thing is when you're doing a convention or something like that, or an appearance somewhere,
yeah,
and then they want you to make a zombie face. It's like, dude, it's gonna have no impact. I've got no zombie makeup on. I'm just gonna look like an idiot, you know.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was like, okay, you know.
Well, for our listeners, if you haven't seen Walking Dead, it's one of the best shows on TV. It's excellent. If you like apocalypse stuff, it's end of the world, fortifying yourself, surviving, food, water, rations, zombies. It's excellent. It's one of the most excellent shows ever, and it starts back up tomorrow night, right? At what time?
Roughly at p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Nice.
And then at 10 o'clock, right after, is going to be, they've actually extended The Talking Dead to an hour now instead of 30 minutes, and it's on immediately after the episode.
Cool.
So that's
like just a TV show commentary kind of thing, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Chris Hardwick just kind of does a recap and, you know, asks some fan questions. There's usually two guests there that they'll rotate around. I believe Steven Yeun, who plays Glenn, and Robert Kirkman are going to be the guests tomorrow night, I believe.
Nice. The comic's excellent. I have all the comics.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is if you follow the comic book at all.
Yeah, I do. I have some catching up to do reading-wise, but I do have them.
Very cool. Yeah, so you'll know then that they really don't go by the comic, and they do this beautiful symphony thing where it's like they bounce back and forth because, you know, they have two different groups of fans to satisfy. You've got the comic book fans, and then you've got the TV show fans, and they're two totally separate entities, you know, so you're constantly juggling to please both of them, so you'll see little snippets of the comic book in the show, and like Daryl and Merle are not in the comic book at all. As a matter of fact, Norman Reedus actually auditioned for the role of Merle, and they loved so much that I believe they created the character of Daryl specifically for him.
Ooh,
which turned out to be a very lucrative thing because he's a fan favorite now.
So, did you ever get to play that video game that came out that won like Game of the Year? I love that game.
The Telltale Walking Game, Walking Dead game.
Yeah,
I did finally. And boy, you want to talk about emotion, man? God, that game really sucks you in.
Yeah,
there was a couple of moments where I was like, "Damn," you know, and you kind of like you're speechless for a minute. That was a really really intense game.
Yeah,
I'm really looking
awesome.
Forward to the new one that's coming out, the Survival Instinct. I think it's in March it's coming out, but it's basically the Dixon Brothers.
I'm kind of worried about that one because Activision, but maybe it'll be good. I'm a little worried.
Fingers crossed, you know. You never know with these video games nowadays.
It's got the real actors in it, though, so that's a good saving point, but it worries me a little bit. But Telltale, that was freaking amazing.
They really, really raised the bar.
They did. That was just, you know, you got to make decisions, get this or get that, save whoever, or you're going to get eight.
And it's not one of those games that you can kind of just sit and kind of have playing in the background. You got to pay attention because there's like decisions that you'll be faced with that you got to make immediately, you know? And it's usually like life or death situations. So it definitely keeps you on your toes.
And the African American dude, what was his name? I like that dude. I can't remember his name, but the main character.
Oh, in the game, Yeah. Oh, jeez. Now I'm drawing a blank.
I can't remember his name.
I remember is Clementine, the little girl.
Clementine, and he Lee.
Lee, that's it. Yeah.
He turned into a zombie and Clementine was left by herself with no Lee, man. I was like, oh my God.
When I got bit, I kind of jumped. It's like, bam.
That game is freaking excellent. And the show is excellent. So, as far as what's going on with all the, I don't know how much you can talk about it, but what's the deal with AMC, with all the changes with the main dudes that creating, what is it, a money issue or just the differences
from what I understand, based on articles I've read and things that I've heard, Darabont's departure, there was actually an article that I read a couple of days ago where somebody actually wrote to Darabont and asked him flat out what was the deal, and he actually wrote a pretty long letter back, and I believe it's the letter's online somewhere in its entirety, where he basically goes into detail about what his plans were to kick off the second season. Have you ever heard of a show called Being Human on Sci-Fi?
Yeah.
It's got the werewolf and the vampire and the ghost. They live together and blah, 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 you know, crazy.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Sam Witwer, who plays the vampire on that show, was the tank zombie. He was the walker that was in the tank that Rick shot. And Darabont cast Sam Witwer as that walker specifically because he wanted to start season two backstory on that particular soldier in his unit. And apparently the story goes, this soldier and his unit were airdropped into Atlanta during all of the beginning of the chaos. There's a little actual interaction between Andrea and her sister, to kind of get the dynamics of the group in there as well, but it's basically their push into Atlanta, and
AMC was like, you know, no, we just want to continue on with the story. We don't want to do any backtracking. And I think it was heated enough to where Darabont just kind of, you know, it was just kind of a creative differences, you know, how they love to use that term a lot of times.
Yeah.
And Mazera, you know, that kind of took us all by surprise. I was really, really shocked. You know, we had seen some issues, for lack of a better word, behind the scenes, when we were shooting this season. It was the first time I had actually seen them jump or skip an episode. They usually go in sequential order and, you know, go one through whatever in order. And when they finished episode 10, they had to skip to episode 12 because episode 11 was being rewritten. So there was already kind of things going on behind the scenes that were a little bit kind of just not normal. So I honestly don't know what was the straw that broke the camel's back with Mazera, but I'm assuming it was very similar to the Darabont departure.
And it's money.
Yeah, and that's what it boils down to, ultimately, a lot of times. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these networks, you know, sometimes they don't treat their showrunners, you know, with respect, or they don't treat them right, you know. And there's so many different variables that, you know, could be in play that, honestly, I really can't speculate.
Well, with AMC, I love Breaking Bad, and the other one's Hell on Wheels, and then, of course, Walking Dead. And
Mad Men, I tell you, man, they made a deal with the devil or something. I mean, AMC
yeah,
is like on fire.
I haven't seen Mad Men. I've seen some of it, but not all of it.
Yeah,
an episode.
It's crazy. I mean, they can do no wrong.
Yeah, and, Breaking Bad's coming back, and then that's going to be the last season, which will be...
Yeah, and I don't know why they're ending it so early.
Money.
But you'd think that they would prolong, like, more money. You know?
Extra. It's like Showtime. Like, come on.
Well, we want to make money. Let's end the show that's making us successful. You know?
Yeah, I don't even know if Hell on Wheels was coming back. I don't know. The way it ended was kind of weird. But so, basically, we're coming back with the Walking Dead, with the governor really pissed off after losing his eye. And that last, if they already filmed all those, how did they do that? They already filmed that whole entire season?
Oh, yeah, we finished season 3, I believe it was November 30th was the last day.
Cool.
Now, they did come back, and again, this is another first that I haven't seen before. And if they've done it before, they've done it, like, under real tight wraps. But they were actually back in Sonoy yesterday and today filming reshoots. So apparently there were some decisions that were made, you know, after the fact that everything was filmed, and, you know, some changes were done, and they've been back yesterday and today filming in Sonoy. So there's no telling. I mean, it's going to be interesting. All the predictions I'm hearing are that, you know, there's going to be cast members that are going to go, there's going to be some that are going to stay, and, of course, no one's safe, you know, on this show.
Yeah.
There's no one character that's safe. But yeah, I think that what they're going to see now is the comic book governor. You know, I think initially the governor was not really, because in the comic, dude is an evil guy. I mean, like, sadistically evil. I mean, and like, the governor on the television show just pales in comparison. But I think that now, you know, he's lost his daughter Penny. He's lost Woodbury, which is what he's built and what he's believed in for so long, that he's a broken man, and he's really a man that has nothing to lose at this point. And that's dangerous.
You got crazy. And the way the last season was Daryl and Merle, they're about to be lynched.
Yep.
I'm not sure how they're going to get out of that one. That'll be interesting to see, definitely. I'm sure they will, but... that's how the last show ended, and then, of course, the governor's pissed off. And then there's the new arrivals to the prison.
Yes,
then that
Tyrese
and killed him. Yeah, the new arrivals to the prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tyrese, you know, he played a big role in the comic book, and, you know, they just introduced him, and you know, he's going to, I think, step up to the plate and really... earn his keep.
Who's that?
Second half.
The big black guy?
Yeah. Tyrese, the guy with the hammer.
The new dude, right?
Yeah.
How much is this season? The new
this
one coming
season
out?
This season is 16 as well. They did an 8-8 split.
Oh, okay. So this one's 8 more. We got 8 more episodes.
Yep.
Nice.
And I, you'll see me again in episode 10 and episode 15 are my next two appearances on the show.
Nice. Are you a hero zombie?
I am in one of the episodes. I can't tell you which one, but yeah, you'll definitely know which one is me.
Nice.
And I can't wait to tell the stories about that scene being filmed when that airs, because that was a doozy.
We'll definitely get you back, and I'll let you know when some dates are open if you want to sit in some more shows. And,
oh, definitely, man. I tell you, there's nothing I love more than talking about The Walking Dead. It's really, I'm just a super fan, honestly.
We'll make it a habit to do some Walking Dead sessions. And
definitely. I'd love to.
Just to catch up.
And you know what's great is that, you know, having worked on the show, it's really opened a lot of doors. You know, and given a lot of opportunities to the folks that, you know, get to play these walkers. We're actually, there's a young lady by the name of Savannah Jade Wehunt, and she's played a number of walkers, and she was actually Chandler Riggs, who plays Carl Grimes, she's stand-in slash stunt double for season 2 and a good part of season 3 as well. And she's actually partnered with a gentleman by the name of James Morales, and have created a company called We Hunt Zombies. And James is the CEO, and what they're doing is they're creating an app-based game called We Hunt Zombies. And what's cool about this game is that it's the first zombie game that I'm aware of where you're given a choice whether or not you want to play as a survivor or you want to play as a walker. So that's really unique, and that's really going to be cool. And what she's done is she's invited a lot of us walkers that have been on the show to actually participate and be zombies in the game, which is going to be, like, the coolest thing ever. So, you know, there's that coming. And, of course, you know, I'm working with these great guys at zombiecast.net now. You know, Freeman, Tabby, and Red, you know, the great group of folks. You know, it's all zombies all the time. You know, I'm trying to throw a nice little element of there just to kind of even it out a bit. But, you know, we're expanding there as well. We just opened up our first forum. We have a board now. That's zombiecast.boards.net. We've got, you know, the ability to post now, and it's just really exciting, all the stuff that's coming. And we're actually in the process of coming out with an app for the ZombieCast podcast as well.
Cool.
And then I also I work with Atlanta Movie Tours, and they run zombie tours every Saturday. And me and another walker who worked on the show, we rotate every Saturday, and we do a 3-hour tour through downtown Atlanta to season 1 filming locations. And I'm actually doing this morning, and yeah, it's always fun to hang out with fans and to just share stories and just talk about something that we all love so much. And just, it's really, really amazing. Truly blessed.
Definitely. It sounds like a great time. We got about 10 minutes left, I think, and one thing I wanted to ask you about is Sid Haig. You've interviewed him, and I love Sid Haig. Of course, I first got introduced to him through the Rob Zombie House of a Thousand Corpses, and then as I dug deeper, I saw Spider Baby, and there's another one where he's a clown. I have that movie. I can't remember the name. It's kind of weird. He's like this clown in it, and
it's really funny because I've met Sid actually a couple of times over the course of the last year or two at a couple different conventions, and I did my first volunteer work with Days of the Dead convention in Atlanta last year, and Sid was there.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the weekend, I pretty much helped him pack up his entire table, all of his pictures and everything, and got him all packed up and ready to go. And I kind of, you know, called in a favor and said, look, you know, I've got this podcast I'm starting up, and I'd love for you to be on our debut show. And he was feeling, yeah, absolutely, not a problem at all. You know, he was very willing. He was going to give us the whole hour on the show. You know, his only stipulation was, I don't want this to be a Captain Spaulding interview. You know, I've been asked those same questions over and over again. He's been in the business for 50 years. This man's been in so much stuff, it's ridiculous. So Spaulding barely scratches the surface. So, you know, he wanted to incorporate some other things. He wanted to talk a little bit about politics, a little economy. So, you know, we gave him that opportunity to do that. And I think it turned out to be a fantastic interview. And we're still getting hits on that interview now. I'm really, really proud of that interview. And that just kind of kicked everything off. And, you know, the buddy that I had, Jamie Chryslow, lives in the UK, and he was my co-host for the Horror Hour. And, you know, it just kind of things got crazy, and then in October we did our 13th episode. We just kind of went on a hiatus, and it's kind of on the shelf for right now. Not put away forever, but just kind of for now.
Who else did y'all interview on the show?
We had Aaron Sagers, who he runs ParanormalPopCulture.com, and he's also a self-proclaimed zombie expert. He does panels at Dragon Con and a lot of different conventions around the country, and he also hosted on the Travel Channel a show called Paranormal Paparazzi that just finished their first season and just got picked up for a second season. And I actually connected with him at Dragon Con last year, and I met him through a friend of a friend, and we were having our paranormal month. And I think that's when we had you on, and we had Aaron on. We had Ben Hansen, one of the co-hosts of Fact or Fate on Sci-Fi. We had him on the show. We had plans to have the Vicious Brothers soon on the show, but you know, it was right about that time that we went on our hiatus. But yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable the connections you make at these conventions. You know, we're always networking, always, you know, meeting new folks. And, you know, this last weekend, I got to become friends with Clu Gulager and John Gulager. I mean, the director of Feast and Piranha 3DD.
I love those.
And Clu Gulager was in Return of the Living Dead, and he's just a screen legend as well. And I had to work with Danny Trejo last weekend for 2 days, me and my wife, and it's
really
just, it's amazing.
What'd you do with that?
Networking.
What'd you do with Danny?
We actually were his handlers for the weekend. We you know, it was my second year volunteering for Days of the Dead, and you know, they were pretty impressed with, you know, what I was able to do for them last year, and they're like, you know, well, what do you want to do? I'm like, well, who needs a handler? And they're like, well, Danny Trejo's really the only one that needs a handler. I'm like, all right, cool, I'll take it. So you know, it basically just entailed you know, he was there Friday and Saturday, and he had 2 6-foot tables. The guy's been in everything. So, I mean, he had so many 8x10 prints, they couldn't all fit on one table. I mean, everything from...
I just saw Death Race movies.
Death Race. He had the Blu-ray for Death Race 3 there. He had From Dusk Till Dawn, Machete, all these movies. And basically, we had the set up where my wife, Steph, had one end of the table, and she would take, you know, the folks' money. He was charging $30 an autograph, and she would take their money, and they would filter down the line, and I would end up taking pictures of the fan with Danny. And it kind of went like that for the whole weekend, and boy, let me tell you, that guy made some serious freaking cash in 2 days, man.
Nice.
It was unbelievable. But, man, yeah, there was a point where we went to dinner with Danny. It was me and my wife went to dinner with him on Friday night, and that was really, really awkward. Didn't really plan on that. It was just kind of like, oh, wow, okay.
Is he a trip?
He was really cool. Yeah, I mean, he's a nice guy. He really is. We talked about his dogs. He has 7 dogs. And he actually emailed me a video of one of his dogs, because it was the craziest thing. He says, I've got a dog where if you spell the word hot dog, he just goes apeshit. And he sends me this video, and literally it's Danny in the garage spelling out hot dog, and his dog is just flipping out. It's just the craziest thing. But he's really into animal rescue. You know, Pit Bulls and Parolees is a show that I think he's heavily involved with. And, you know, I did ask him at one point, you know, with these animals, when you find a pit bull or an animal like that that's been trained for so long to kill and has, you know, been in these conditions and stuff like that, what kind of turnaround time do you look at to rehabilitate an animal like that? And he told me that a couple years ago they had actually gotten a hold of 2 of Mike Vick's dogs, and one of those dogs now goes to children's hospitals and plays with the kids in the hospital. I thought that was pretty damn cool.
That's something.
Yeah, you know, we talk about dogs, everything, and they go to the airport.
on Saturday, and that was another interesting car ride because it was me driving, Danny in the shotgun, my wife in the backseat, and Alan Troutman, who played the Tar Man zombie in Return of the Living Dead, in the backseat of my truck.
Oh, God, so many, like, pinch-myself moments from last weekend. It was just so surreal. But, yeah, they had a lot of really great guests. And man, you should come up one time for one of those, man. It's a really, really good time.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So what are some, I just saw American Mary and ABC The Death. Those are pretty good movies that are new. I'm curious, what are some new ones coming up that you're interested in that are coming out soon?
You know, I cannot wait to see Dark Skies. I am so excited for that movie.
Who's doing that?
It's the UFO movie that's coming out.
Yeah.
I think on the 22nd. It's got that girl from Felicity in it. That's the only girl, the only person I recognize in the movie. But it looks pretty creepy, and it looks along the lines of, The Fourth Kind, which I also enjoyed. I'm definitely looking forward to that. The remake of Evil Dead is coming up.
Oh,
soon.
Yeah, that's supposed to be really good, I hear.
Really looking forward to that. Bruce Campbell.
They said that was NC-17. It was NC-17, and they had to drop it down the R.
Yeah. You can't even watch the trailer on YouTube up in New York. It's crazy. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. And, of course, you guys have all seen the trailers for World War Z. That's kind of getting mixed reviews right now. I'm still on the fence on that one. I guess we'll see. Is
we'll
all
see what happens.
About that one. But yeah, there's a lot of great stuff coming. Guillermo del Toro is coming out with Pacific Rim this year. That's going to be a huge blockbuster. It's just going to be a really, really exciting summer.
Definitely. I heard Brad Pitt up and he bought a Vlad the Impaler historical movie, and I don't know, I haven't heard anything else about it.
No way, really?
Yeah, I read about it like last year, and it's supposed to be like 300, but with Vlad the Impaler and no fantasy crap. Just totally historical.
That would be awesome.
I hope they're still doing it. It better be.
That would be really, really good.
Yeah, just completely the story of Vlad the Impaler, no fantasy crap, just strictly the historical scenario of Vlad the Impaler. I'm hoping they better not drop it. I'm going
to
piss.
They need to strip away a lot of this crap that they package these movies up in now. It's like everything's in 3D now, and it's like, you know, it's not really necessary to do that kind of stuff, you know? It's like they're trying to enhance the theater-going experience by making everything in 3D and super Dolby Digital, and it's like, you know, the theater-going experience is not possible for me anymore.
I've been on this kick of old horror movies lately. Like, I just ordered Terror Train with Jamie Lee Curtis, and there's another one, Prison with Viggo Mortensen, and Terror Vision, and,
Terror Vision.
Yeah, it's like weird stuff like that.
Do you have
like
Netflix?
Old one. No, but I've been ordering them cheap, like Amazon. You can find some of them really cheap.
Dude,
I'm telling you,
Netflix. I'm seriously considering ditching my cable and just going with the $8 a month for Netflix because, I mean, dude, the movies that they have on there now, I mean, they've got some really, really good classic horror films on there now. And, you know, they've started to put TV shows on there now. So really, God, I think I watch more Netflix than I do the TV a lot of times. But, yeah, I'm really impressed with a lot of the slasher, campy horror films from the 80s that are coming onto Netflix now.
I've been like on this, I don't know, crusade to watch them lately, trying to find like the old assault kicks, not great, but it's still fun to watch. Kicks. There's a new movie coming out that's from 2005 and it's finally being released, but, on DVD. I'm fixing to go to my wish list. I got it on there on Amazon, but it's by Robert Rodriguez Presents, and, it's by his brother. Hold on, I'm trying to get the name of it. Let me find my stupid wish list. It comes out in March, and it looks like it should be very interesting. It's called, like, Coronada the Demon or something weird. Hold on, let me find it. I know you'll be interested in it.
Definitely.
I'm about to put my wish list.
I'm all about demons.
Yeah, it's called
Corandero, Dawn of the Demon. Corandero, Dawn of the Demon. And it's Robert Rodriguez Presents. And it's by Sergio Acosta, whoever that is, March 12th. And it's coming out on DVD. And Rodriguez's brother directed it. And it's Robert Rodriguez Presents. It looks crazy. It's,
oh, wow.
Eduardo Rodriguez is his name. And let me see what it says. Does it say what it's about? No, it doesn't really have much on Amazon, but if it's got Robert Rodriguez, if it's got anything like From Dusk Till Dawn, I'm there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Robert Rodriguez and Demons. Absolutely, son.
Yeah. His brother Eduardo Rodriguez, his director, is called, I'll spell it, Curandero. Dawn of the Demon. It's from 2005, but for some reason it never came to DVD. And there's a blurb on it by Bloody Disgusting. I've tried to find it and see if it was available anywhere. It's not until, like, till March 12th. Disturbing and Unsettling Horror-Dusting.com.
Huh.
That's the blurb on it, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to keep my eyes open for that one.
All right, man, well,
Hey, dude, this was a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, we're definitely. I'll let you know when there's some open dates if you want
to
come co-host again, and we'll do some Walking Dead updates. And it's been a great show, and I've enjoyed it. It's been some nostalgia from my wilder, crazier days in Georgia, where all hell broke loose at that house. Well, it was the Evil Dead house.
Right.
I had a lot of weird paranormal stuff happen at that house. I'm still
psychologically
getting over it. But I appreciate it, Michael. It's been a lot of fun. You got any links or anything you want to share?
We do our weekly broadcast. If you go to zombiecast.net, we have links to all of the shows that we've done, links to shows that we recently post. We've also got a link to our new forum board. And pretty much just keeping on top of all of our shows and everything that we do is through zombiecast.net. And if you're in the Atlanta area and you're interested in taking the big zombie tour, you can go to atlantamovietours.com and book a ticket to a tour. And either me or my buddy Charlie will be your guide, and we'll get you taken care of. And then, of course, keep an eye out for We Hunt Zombies. That's going to be coming real soon. And there's actually, I believe, some cast members that I think may be involved in this as well. So it's going to be pretty exciting.
That sounds like a fun. That's an app, right? Like for a phone or what?
Yeah, it's like a game for your cell phone. That you play on like your iPad or something like that, or your iPhone.
Gotcha. All right. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, and we had Tess on, which was great. Tessa, I don't even know if Tess is still there. Are you still there, Tessa?
I think she ditched
the archives. No, but it was great having you on, Michael. Everybody, make sure you stop by churchofmavisradio.com. You're listening to UFO Paranormal Radio Network, and we'll see you next Saturday with Sherry and Brad Seiger about four-leg miracles, Lassie Come Home stories, and stuff like that. Heartwarming. It's going to be heartwarming. Wow, I'm having a word twist here. I'm tired. I've been up since like 5. But we'll see you next Saturday, and take care, Michael. I'll be in touch. Everybody have a good weekend.
You too, brother.
All right, take care, man.
This is a commercial-free archive edition of our live radio show that airs